Good evening. James McCanna here with my Science Hour for August 8th, 2019. Some very strange things happening in the past week in the kind of the social geopolitical scene. For example, Biden announced that if he were elected president, he would definitely go back into the Paris Climate Accords. Now, the reason that Trump didn't do that was because it was a terrible deal. It allowed India and China to build as many coal-burning plants as they wanted, and they're burning very dirty coal to produce electricity for their expanding industrial complexes. They would then charge the United States for any coal that we burned and give that money to India and China and tax us, and it would just basically, it was another way, New World Order way, to destroy the United States. That's all it was. It was never to stop pollution. China is opening up a new coal-burning power plant every day. That's how much they're industrializing. So it was never about clean air or stopping pollution or carbon emissions. It was never about that. So anyway, these people are now showing their colors. They're just New World Order pawns. That's all Obama ever was. That's all Bushes ever were. And they just march to the drum of the basically New World Order. Here's one for you. And, my main radio show is broadcast weekly from a station called WWCR. That stands for Worldwide Christian Radio, and it brings Christian broadcasting to the world. And although I'm dealing with science, I'm also a Christian and also believe in a creator, etc., and that there is a divine plan that we're living in, and we have to recognize that and understand that people are not just another smarter monkey out there. There's something much more going on here. So at any rate, there's a tremendous push to basically attack all things that the United States stands for in the name of, things like white supremacy. And how about if you went to some Muslim country and talked about Muslim supremacy? Well, they would laugh at you because that's exactly what's going on. Or how about going into Israel and talking about Jewish supremacy in their country? You know, in their country is the point. So anyway, Google has banned any ads that use the word Christian. So if there's Christian in the word, or in the advertisement, or in the company name, or in anything else related to it, they will ban it as part of their banning anything that has to do with... anyway, so it's just bizarre. This is another move. And then along with that, Whole Foods, the so-called wholesome place where you're supposed to buy, non-genetically modified food, which really they don't. They sell a lot of genetically modified foods. But anyway, that's not the point. They're sponsoring, listen to this one. I mean, this shocked me. They're sponsoring a drag queen story hour for kids. This is Whole Foods sponsoring a weekly, it's called Drag Queen Story Hour. And it's for little kids to normalize whatever. I just can't believe the kind of things that are going on today. Kids today, and, with mass shootings going on, I'm not going to comment on those other than the society we live in is really, really torqued, really messed up in a big way. And it's just like upside down and backwards. So... And it's getting worse because it's being pushed in that direction by certain elements that they use goodness. Remember, in the Bible, it says that watch for these events where people basically with forked tongues, with twisted messages, and very professional will come out and try and get you off of track. And then just another quick comment. Now, this one blew my mind when I saw it the other day. NASA has a new program. It's called Ask a Spaceman. Now, I saw this and I was like, what? I mean, I absolutely couldn't believe this. I mean, Ask a Spaceman. Anyway, their first big push is to try and convince you that Earth is going to become like Venus, this hellish, hot, tremendously molten planet. And the reality is that Venus is a new planet. It does not have plate tectonics. They never formed. And what they're saying is that the sun is going to expand, and eventually Earth will become like Venus, totally molten, and with all of the oxygen in the air and hydrogen going up in the form of sulfuric acid and other forms of acid in the atmosphere. Just bizarre claims that just came out of nowhere. The previous belief, by the way, of the sun was that it started and it is slowly burning down. It eventually will burn out. But now they're totally reversing that in like just a moment's notice, and saying that the sun is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually the Earth will become hotter and hotter and hotter, and all life will die. And you know, it's just bizarre, with no substantiation of any kind for saying this. This is in the Ask a Spaceman program that they're putting out. I mean, it's just so bizarre. I mean, there must be even standard astronomers who believe in ridiculous things that are looking at this and slapping their forehead saying, what on earth is going on? So anyway, this week I'm going to return to talking about space science and space science topics. The main topic I'm going into tonight is number one. A number of weeks ago, I talked about Mark Gaffney's work on the crustal shifting, as we're calling it, crustal shifting of planet Earth. And of course, other planets have experienced this also. And the use of cities, ancient cities, some of them going back, who knows, 10,000 years. But putting a small caveat on that story, because, for example, if you look at the cities of Chichen Itza or some of the other cities that might be around the world that are not aligned with the north-south-east directions, then the situation, we know that the Mayan cities were rebuilt on a 54-year cycle. Every 54 years, they had a ceremony. It was like a Passover ceremony. And then if the planet was not destroyed again by Venus, then they would rebuild it in much more glory. And then, and so the cities there are layered. They're layered one upon the other, upon the other, upon the other. And so what we see are actually modern Mayan buildings, modern being from the 800 AD era, but they were built on the framework and the city gridwork of the ancient cities. And it's from the Mayans that we understand this very issue, that they rebuilt their cities. And now, why would Venus be so central to a Central American indigenous people that, by the way, were in existence? Their history goes back thousands of years, probably prior to the Egyptian pyramids. And yet we're told that these people wandered across the straits of Alaska, the Bering Strait, to between Russia and Alaska, then to populate the Western Hemisphere. A story that could not possibly be true, but something, as kids return to school, they'll be studying this ridiculous non-truth in textbooks. But at any rate, I'm going to go into the real history of the inner planets here in a minute, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, and then also discuss some of the fairy tale science that's coming out. Couldn't possibly be true. So as we look at cities around the world, you find the same phenomena, that what you actually see there in some cases is the original city. It's something that was dug up recently, and you're actually looking at the city that went under when Venus the Comet went by. And in other cases, you're dealing with cities that were built upon ancient cities. And in the case of the Mayans, that's the second situation, is what happened. And so let me just give you a somewhat brief historical scenario. And I don't pick dates myself. These are dates that come from other people's dating, and they seem plausible. For example, the height of the Mayans was between about 800 and about 1300 AD. This is what we call the modern Mayans. Now, they were very productive in building the Mayan cities that we see today. And, of course, when they were rediscovered by Catherwood, and this was like in the 1800s, when they were rediscovered, that was 500 years of jungle growing on them, the roots getting into the structures, breaking them down, rocks falling down off the side of these pyramids. So they had 500 years of jungle growth to basically work and destroy these cities, and that's how they found them. If you see the Catherwood prints, which I recommend everybody go see, this man was a fantastic artist. He could bring the life out of a ruin that they found in the jungle. That was only 500 years in a jungle-like setting. Some of the other pyramids are in a desert-like setting, and so therefore are very well preserved from the time that they went under. For example, there are cities on the western coast of Peru, off by the ocean, that are very well preserved. They estimate there were as many as 40 million people living there at the time when the city went under. In other words, and it appears what happened is a big tsunami wave came in across the Pacific, washed everything away. And then, of course, just a quick comment on Thor Heyerdahl's great work dealing with the Polynesians and the people in Peru. In other words, that they were somehow connected historically, that there was transportation between the Polynesians and the Peruvians. And if you look at them, there is a lot of resemblance physically in the two groups of people, the Polynesians and the people from Peru. They simply have a lot in common, their physical appearance. So there has to be something to that story. So this idea that they came across the land bridge between Russia and Alaska when the oceans were lower is, you know, it's just fairy tale. There's really nothing to support that at all. And also the idea that mankind, as we know it, modern man, somehow began in the birth of man in Mesopotamia, 7,000 years ago, and all of the races of man somehow evolved, which is another misconception, that somehow all of these different races around the world evolved in that period of time is just utterly absurd, because we know that they were totally separated. And when, say, Marco Polo first ventured across, found the spice route to the east, those eastern cultures in China, Asia, Eastern Asia, were already very much in existence and already had their own culture. developed languages completely apart from anything that you would see in Europe or Eastern or Western Europe at the time. And of course, when some of the wars occurred at that time, and the expansionism at that time, that's where the bubonic plague came from, that moved into Europe and killed, you know, 30%, 35% of all people in Europe during that Middle Ages period, the Black Plague era. But there again, that's just proof that these groups of people in the Japanese, on the Japanese islands, all there, the Philippines, the same, the Polynesians, the same, all of these groups were remnants of the great catastrophe when the world was very highly populated. And so the Polynesians, what they did is they knew they were looking for their homeland, which, and of course, none of this is taught in history books, but it seems that what the Polynesians were doing, they were looking for their homeland, which went under in that great demise. Also, and there were a number of catastrophes back then, so it's hard to separate those out. And of course, since nobody's studying this, nobody's allowed to study this, except there again, I've been studying it. Mark Gaffney's looking at the pole shift aspect of this, something that I dabbled in myself. These are efforts. Velikovsky worked in this. Hapgood, other people worked in this arena. And throughout modern history, trying to study the demise of these civilizations and somehow putting them together in a chronological order. That's what Velikovsky was doing, trying to put all this together in a chronological order. And in all cases, I repeat, in all cases, we come to the fact that these events, these massive changes, came from outer space and were related, the most recent one, with the planet Venus. And so there again, you can see what NASA is trying to do. They're trying to just take any rational story with Venus and change it into this ridiculous story. By the way, this idea that Venus is somehow hot because of a greenhouse effect, they're reviving this. I forgot to mention that in the commentary earlier in the show here, that somehow Earth will be like Venus, but the implication is that Venus became hot, that Venus was once a wonderful water planet like Earth. Absolutely no scientific evidence for that at all. They're just making these statements. And the idea was basically from Carl Sagan. Back in the late 70s, Carl Sagan suggested that the high temperature of Venus was due to a greenhouse effect. And then when people pointed out that that doesn't work, then he had the exaggerated greenhouse effect. And that kind of like was throwing more mud on the wall. And that stuck for a while until people finally said, no, that doesn't work. That for 100 reasons, the greenhouse effect does not work to account for the high temperature of Venus. The only thing that accounts for the high temperature of Venus is the fact that it is a new planet. Just like Hale-Bopp is basically the newest planetary member of our solar system. And for many years, that's what I had at the top of my homepage. I said, welcome Hale-Bopp, newest planetary member of our solar system. And it's in the process of planetary development. So, that's ongoing. But this idea that somehow the greenhouse effect is somehow the cause of the high temperature of Venus, and therefore that somehow it works on Earth, is once again ludicrous. And that's the perfect example. Because if the greenhouse effect does not work on Venus, which is like almost pure carbon dioxide atmosphere with sulfur dioxide, many, many greenhouse gases. If it doesn't work on Venus, then it's certainly not going to work on Earth, where there's 0.04% carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. It's just I gave some examples a number of weeks ago about how you, if you took golf balls and then you took 10,000 golf balls, you laid them out on a table, and one of those golf balls would, you could paint black, and that would be a carbon dioxide molecule. That's how sparse carbon dioxide is in our atmosphere. It's not going to block anything and create a greenhouse effect. It's absolutely ludicrous. But anyway, back to my original comment that the cities, some of the cities that we use to locate the old North Pole are actually built, they're new buildings built on the gridwork of the old buildings in old cities. And Chichen Itzen in Mexico, southeastern Mexico, is a great example, Uxmal. Tulum is a city that was basically, it's like a seaport. That's very interesting because it faced east, not west. It's on the eastern side. And clearly, the temple that sits up on a hill, my way of thinking is it was a basically a lighthouse, a place where they could see to come in at night, because especially down in the tropics, you have about a 12-hour day and about a 12-hour night. So a lot of the times you'd be coming down the coast at night, and what you'd be looking for if you wanted to do trading with the Mayans, the ancient Mayans, this was thousands of years ago, not 800 to 1100 AD, but the ancient Mayans, you would come down that coastline off the reefs of Quintana Roo, the southeastern territory of Mexico. And, of course, it wasn't Mexico at the time. It was Mayan land at the time. And you would see that Tulum basically light. And Tulum was a fairly highly populated area. It didn't have the major temples that you found at Chichen Itza, etc., and farther inland, but it was the go-to port on the eastern coast of what is now Quintana Roo. Okay, so going back into history, celestial history, we have Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. Those are that's the order of the planets coming out from the sun. And Mercury, in all respects, is somewhat of a mystery, but you can see the trail marks of electrical discharges that came across the surface of Venus. They're like lines. They're a linear path where electrical discharges hit that planet and blew out craters. And so there are two types of craters, basically impact craters and then electrical discharge craters. And from a distance, they look very much the same. But in terms of impact craters, you're not going to get a perfect row of impact craters connected with little lines. And those are the electrical discharge craters. You can see them all over the planet Mercury. Okay, but jumping out, all that indicates is that Mercury is its proximity to the sun. Mercury has had many big comets come by it, and of course, the end result is electrical discharges, which scar its surface. But coming up to Venus is a relatively new planet, and this, of course, is where. It's probably one of the biggest bones of contention between real science and standard astronomy, that they firmly hold that somehow all of these planets formed at the same time. It could not possibly be true. And let's just look at Mercury, for example. If Mercury were a planet that was 4 billion years old, it would lie in the plane of the planets, and its orbit would be perfectly circular around the sun. And that's not the case. Mercury's orbit is inclined and it's very elliptical. And so it simply does not fit the bill for something that is billions of years old. And here's the reason why. The sun is not a perfect ball, like anything spinning, like Jupiter, like Saturn, or like Earth itself. There's a bulge at the equator, and that bulge is due to its spinning. So that puts a mass out from the center of the sun that just happens to be perfectly aligned with the equatorial region of the sun. And so, by the way, when I said Mercury is not in the plane of the planets, what I really should have said is that Mercury's orbit is not in the plane of the sun's bulge, the bulge being due to centrifugal force because the sun is spinning. And Jupiter does that, Saturn does that, and they pull objects that are in orbit around them into that plane. So when the object is above the bulge, it pulls down. When it's below the bulge, it pulls up. And so that makes the object that's in orbit work into the plane of the bulge. And so anyway, this you can see this in Jupiter, the main four main Galilean moons of Jupiter. You can see it around Saturn. The main moons of Saturn are in a very, very nice plane. That's the reason why. But not all moons of Saturn, not all moons of Jupiter, and not all objects orbiting the sun are in the plane of the bulge. So at any rate, I could go on and on about idiosyncrasies of orbits and bulges in the solar system. It turns out that the bulge of Jupiter and the bulge of the sun are aligned. And that is because their spin axis and their composition of their atmospheres, because they are the original pair of the solar system. Okay, so anyway, I could go on about that. But Mercury is not an old planet in the sense that either it's a young planet, also has a recent history, or it's had close encounters with other large objects that move through the solar system. And it's in a perfect position to encounter a lot of activity because of its proximity to the sun. Okay, so anyway, this is what I'm doing here. I'm talking about why the planets that we see, the inner planets, could not possibly be as old as, say, the sun. Okay, or the solar system. I'm trying to defray this idea that the solar system started all at one time and nothing has happened since. So in the case of Mercury, either it's relatively young, it looks like a very old planet, and it probably is, but it more than likely had a recent encounter with some big object that threw it out of its orbit. And that's why its orbit is not commensurate with an ancient object. It certainly looks like an old hulk of an object, of a planet, etc. Okay, so then Venus. Venus is clearly a young planet. I mean, there's no question that we have historical record of it, which is pretty amazing. With only 9 major planets, including Pluto. Yes, Pluto is a planet, in spite of what votes went on a couple years ago to demote it from being a planet. Venus, or Pluto is a planet, but okay, so there's, you know, the classic 9 planets between Mercury and Pluto and all the other ones in between. Venus is clearly a young planet. And of course, that in no way, shape, or form fits into standard astronomy. So, but you look at Venus, it has an amazingly huge atmosphere. Say that it had a greenhouse effect for 4.5 billion years, it would have boiled off its atmosphere, and that's going on right now. Venus is boiling off its atmosphere because of the high temperature. So it would have had to have an enormous, enormous atmosphere. And while they're trying to characterize it in this Ask a Spaceman goofy Looney Tune deal of NASA that's coming out, they're trying to say that, Venus was just like Earth. And all of this that you see in the atmosphere is a result of the sun expanding and overheating. That's just, anyway. Not even mainstream astronomers who are off the wall would even accept that deal. But Venus is very clearly a young planet. And the point of doing this is to get back to Earth. So I'll talk about Mars first. That Mars, we have historical record of it being a water planet. I talk about this all the time. Some people might say, well, you repeat a lot of things. Well, yeah, that's a teaching technique. Because if people hear it enough times, they will start to pick up what I'm saying. If I just say something once, most people will forget it by next week. If I repeat it next week and I repeat the same thing in 2 weeks and then next year, people will start to pick it up. So Mars had an atmosphere and oceans, and the recently released photos of the surface of Mars are incredible. They show layering. They show sedimentary rock. There's a photo of a mountain, which is in the middle of a crater. So the little rover thing is up near the top. And they're showing layers of sedimentary rock at the top of this mountain, which means that that rock that developed there, the sedimentary rock, at one time was below a body of water, like a lake or an ocean or possibly a riverbed, who knows. But Mars, once again, does not fit the bill for an ancient planet. Well, you know, trying to date the planet itself is not an easy thing to do because all we can see is the surface. But the issue is that its characteristics, its surface characteristics, are not commensurate with something that's 4.5 billion years old. It recently had water. And you can see it, all of the telltale signs of water, and water erosion, and water sedimentation, sedimentary rock, rock that's moved, channels, riverbeds, everything, deltas, river deltas, the erosion on the side of mountains that were in a ocean, basically in an ocean, like Olympus Mons has rivers. And if you're familiar with shield volcano islands, there's many around the world. And on the windward side, where they catch the weather and the wind, the typical trade winds, there's a lot of erosion. And it forms rivers, and they meander down to the ocean, and a lot of times fall over cliffs. Mars, mountains on Mars, especially Olympus Mons, biggest volcano in the solar system, has very characteristic rivers that flow down into what used to be an ocean. So all of this is very visible. And if these were characteristics were over like billions of years old, then they simply wouldn't be there anymore. They would have been long since done away with and from wind storms and tremendous dust storms that occur on Mars all the time. Okay, so getting back to planet Earth and the idea that Earth has had major events in somewhat recent history, and the idea that the buildings, getting back to the original topic, that the buildings of civilizations are built upon the old grid where they did line up with the old North Pole, etc. And it's very hard to sort this out because, as in the case of the Mayans, they took the old gridwork, which is off by, you know, a good 13 degrees from the true north, south, east, and west coordinates. They took those ancient city streets and locations and rebuilt temple cities incorrectly to the old, basically to the old street patterns. And so the buildings that are there now are new, but the structure, the north, south, east, and west directions, and of course dedication, for example, Chichen Itza is to Venus. And the Popol Vuh was very clear that they expected every 54 years Venus to come back and do damage to Earth. And that's because that was the period between the two encounters of Earth with Venus. the first time apparently not so drastic, and the second time really shook Earth to its knees. Mountain building, tsunamis, mass extinctions nearly of the human race. That was the Moses event. Thousands of years earlier was the Noah event. The Moses event being the Venus event. And all of these being caused by celestial events. Events that are comets, basically comets coming by some close. The Venus event, Venus came by very close. And in the case of, remember that the Israelites, they talk about the light or the rod up in the sky that lit their way. So at night, when the sun was not shining, they had a light basically constantly with them for the 40 years they wandered in the desert. And then eventually came upon what they eventually called their home. The Moses event, we have such amazing detail, and we have such amazing detail from all around the world that corroborates the same story. Okay, so I'll wrap that topic up, but I think it's very interesting how geology and archaeology go hand in hand, but you have to understand them from a realistic point of view, not this idea that top-down astronomy dictates that the Earth formed 4.5 billion years ago and nothing has happened since. You cannot understand archaeology with that model. It's just absolutely impossible because the history of man, and that's typically what archaeology is related to, the history of man, not the history of animals. There's other fields of study that study animal history and the history of animals, but the archaeology is the study of man, and the archaeologists simply have their hands tied and their feet tied when it comes to any type of realistic research, because they always have to start with the assumption that the Earth was like 4.5 billion years old and that everything is here came from evolution. These are starting points which couldn't possibly be true. And so hopefully we're breaking out of that mold. I broke out of that mold decades ago, 50 years ago, and other people have also, but we're trying to bring the masses out of the dark ages, out of the well, the global climate change dark ages or the greenhouse effect dark ages. And, people, if I say that, I should qualify something here. If I say that, people will get very upset. And I go to meetings with people and they are just, oh, global climate change, we got to do something. There's people talking about starting to move the populations to higher ground because it's imminent. And we have to start planning for the imminent rise of the ocean levels, etc. And when I say something negative against those basically ludicrous claims that they've been saying for decades this is supposed to happen, and there's not an inkling of, if you look at places like Venice that have, that they're actually sinking. Venice is actually sinking, and that's the problem. It's not that the ocean levels are rising, but they don't tell you that. When they show you that, as using Venice as a picture poster child for a place that's having inundation and potential loss of really high-end real estate, they don't mention that it's sinking into the ocean basically on a daily basis, and they have great balloons that they built under these buildings just to keep them, they're basically floating there. But that's not due to ocean rise level. That's due to the fact that the land is sinking. But anyway, when I say something against global climate change or the greenhouse effect or whatever, remember that my solution to the wind generator, to the energy issue, and my solution to water issues are probably the most green and ecological solutions ever to hit the planet. Yet That doesn't mean I have to buy into the hysteria, the global climate change hysteria that is totally non-scientific. You know, and when people talk about, oh, all the scientists who agree, yeah, they're all on the government payroll. That's why they agree. That's why they've agreed for all these years, and they've fired anybody who wouldn't think the way they think. You know, complete fascism in science. Absolutely absurd. But I'll be the first one to tell you that we have to stop using petroleum and coal, and especially nuclear. I mean, the same people that are trying to tell you that the climate is going to change are trying to tell you that nuclear fuel is green. Oh, my goodness. It's the worst. It's the devil. I have a friend of mine. I used to be on his radio show, and he called plutonium the devil's rock, because it's the thing that's going to kill the human race. I mean, it's going to. It's just a matter of time until those casks start to erupt and melt down, especially the newer high octane brands that they're burning in nuclear reactors today for energy. They have to be cooled forever, and there's no way to, there's a point of no return where all you're doing is creating electricity to cool down the vast amounts of spent nuclear fuel. And if there's a change in economics where that can't be done anymore, those casks are going to start to explode, basically. They're going to start to melt down. And at that point, the radioactivity is just going to be leached into the earth. There's no other way around it. Which, by the way, if you have not heard, there is already the, I'm not announcing this myself, but I've heard people saying that there's bubonic plague, the black plague from the Middle Ages in Los Angeles, that the rats, the people living in the street and basically defecating in the streets, that's what caused the black plague in Europe, is unsanitary living conditions. And the Looney Tune mayor of Los Angeles and other places, they're just like, oh, isn't it wonderful we have people living in the streets and with no toilet facilities, no shower facilities, and a lot of them drug addicts. I mean, they think that's socialist paradise. That's the end of end-alls, as they say. But anyway, just a little side note there. The work I'm doing with the wing generator and the water systems is something that, you know, hopefully will save the world, because of it's the greenest thing around. But I don't go around using the green word, because it's been so politicized and misused. You know, 20 years ago, you could have used the word green and it would have had some meaning. Now the word green has no meaning at all. Just like, say, you know, it's gone the way of the word chastity. But I digress. Back to the wing generator. I'll make some comments here. Now, a lot of people have been looking for updates, what's going on. And just to explain, the bigger systems, the 25 kilowatt, 50 kilowatt and above, they go up to much larger sizes than that. But those need a crew. There's no way that somebody on a first-time basis is going to set something like that up. So that needs a crew. But what I'm working on now is hopefully will be available very soon, is a 10 kilowatt and smaller models that we can just ship out and people can assemble them themselves. In fact, that we could send instructions so that people could buy some of the materials for setting up the base anyway, not the wing generator itself or the other electronics, etc. That all would come from us. But some of the support equipment is fairly heavy duty, but it's not rocket science. So the average person could order a local metal person to put that together and then have it installed, and then the electrical part installed with a licensed electrician, and in that way avoid the extra cost of sending a crew out, not only the extra cost to the customer, but the extra complication that it would put on basically the JMCC wing company to maintain crews that are moving around the country, setting things up, etc. So anyway, that's in the works. So we'll be getting back to people again, people that have been interested. It's just that I've been very busy with many, many things recently. And so it's just hard to keep up with everything I have to do. This show is one of the things that I do try and maintain every week, because people can come and listen and they go, yep, he's still alive, he's still there, he's still talking. And of course, the water filters, that's a mainstay also, is that the sales page is there. And anyway, just remember that I'm not going to go into detail again, but last week I talked about the MR5 and the MR7, the new, very inexpensive, very good price on whole house water filters. Those are on my sales page, the web page, and then also 15% off all water filter orders, the canisters, the water filter elements, etc. And then also on my webpage, the wing information and the paid cast. So a lot of plates I'm spinning here, a lot of stuff I'm trying to keep up with on a daily and weekly basis. I mentioned this on John Moore's show this week, and I'll mention it again about, we had a couple horrific shootings again this week. And the issue is, that the way I see it, is that there's never a real investigation into the shooters themselves and their history and who's been contacting them, etc., and try and coordinate this with other shooting incidents and coordinate these, because if not, these all look like lone lunatics out there, you know, with their own agenda. And I guarantee you that is not the case. I guarantee you there is somebody, some group, somewhere behind these shooting activities. And they're planned events. They're, you know, they have thousands of these people that are trained, or I don't know if they're trained, but they're psychologically controlled. And they're on a moment's notice, they can send one of them out to go off the deep end. You can read books about control, mind control, artificial intelligence, but there's no question in my mind that there are programs out there that are meant, designed to isolate these people and test, you know, and they can do that with Google. I mean, Google could, or other, search engines or other social media could easily start filtering these people out if somebody knew how to do this by sending ads out or influential messaging. Start to track down people who would be potential shooters. And then they go in, and always they have a handler. And that's the key. It might be a cyber handler. It might be somebody that they never even see or meet, but is controlling them and influencing them and sending them off in these wild directions. Because walking into a mall or a public place and starting to shoot is absolutely off the wall, of course. But how did these people get to that point? Who is communicating with them? What's their story? What's the real story? And that's what never, ever comes out, because the real questions are never asked. To coordinate shooter A with shooter B with shooter C with shooter D and on and on and on. What is the common thread? What's the history? I mentioned too that either their cell phone or their computer would have the tracking history, but if somebody is that adept at mind control, like the CIA or who else you might find, the intelligence agencies, etc., the way they manipulate people, and have they have experts in this, they have people who are PhDs in information control, that can basically grab onto these people and mentally control them. So there's no investigation into that aspect of these shootings. And it's apparently very difficult to prevent these. But in some of these cases, there was clear and clear evidence of these people having problems. Very clear evidence that now people are talking about afterwards. But the question is, why don't they talk about it before? Or why are they blocked? Or they there's some aspect of either shame or guilt, or a sense of privacy for people. What, who knows what it is? But there's no investigation of the networks that create these shooters, and that's the point. And there's more out there. Believe me, there's more out there all over the place. All they have to do is somebody push their button into the right direction and send them off, and you're going to have another shooting incident. Not one, but many. Just to change in directions again. After doing this radio show now for about 20 years, it just seems like, well, of course, the same topics keep coming up over and over again. But I find it amazing, it's still absolutely amazing, that people come to listen to this show for information. It's commercial free. There's no advertisement. There's no sponsors. There are no donors. Just the things that you buy support this show. And if you don't, then I support it myself, because I think it's important to keep this information going out there. But to imagine that science has not advanced, they're still clinging to these unbelievably archaic ideas, and you still see news magazines that are supposedly represent science having the same worn-out gee whiz titles again. Oh, will this new star cause a problem with the Big Bang Theory? I mean, how many times can you say that? How many different ways can you say that before you just run out of, run off the edge of the page and into Never Never Land? So it's just incredible that people are getting, real information from a source like this. It's like the actual news. A lot of news agencies are springing up that are doing actual old-time reporting and investigative journalism. They're coming out of the woodworks lately. You can see them on the internet. They're making progress. And these are the new news agencies of tomorrow, because the standard media is just off the wall. They don't do reporting. It's simply commentary about basically opinions, and they're very much coordinated opinions. But science also is just completely lost. Let me end with a couple notes about the sun. And recently, there have been some red auroras. Now, these are rather unusual. And the claim is that this is also from oxygen in the upper atmosphere. But typically, auroras are green. I can tell you from experience growing up in Minnesota that during the summertime, especially August, you would get these beautiful auroral displays. And the farther you north you would go, or go up into Canada, you are almost guaranteed a nightly show of an auroral display in the month of August. So one thing I can encourage people on my webpage, if you go to the very top, for the last maybe month, I have a statement there that you should take the family camping. So it's something, take them out into the wilderness, go up to north, or go to a campground. But go to some place where you can see the night sky, because we're heading into this month of August, which is Aurora month. And it's also the peak of the hurricane season and one of the peaks of the tornado season, One of the other peaks of the tornado season, oddly enough, is in February, something that most people would not guess. But the June to November hurricane season is centered in August. That's where you have the most number of hurricanes. That's the aurora season in the Northern Hemisphere. And in the Southern Hemisphere, it switched around. The month of February is the height of the aurora season, but you have auroras of different kinds. That's because the North Pole is pointed towards the sun during summer, during northern summer, and then the southern pole of Earth, the magnetic pole of Earth, is pointed towards the sun. And there's a little complication in that the magnetic field lines, the north magnetic pole is towards the northern hemisphere, and the south magnetic pole is towards, not exactly aligned, but near the southern geographical spin axis of the Earth pole, and the, what we call the South Pole. But the auroras are basically electrical phenomena as the Earth discharges the solar capacitor. And so a lot of times the scientists, astronomers, atmospheric physicists, don't understand that we are involved in a electrical discharge in our solar system, and that's due to fusion in the sun and the differential charge that drives the solar system, that drives comets, etc. But imagine something as basic as that. Auroras are nocturnal clouds, which are another form of electrical phenomenon up in the night sky. These are seasonal, and they're based on the activity, the electrical activity of the sun. And so if we didn't have an electrical capacitor around the sun, we would not have tornadoes, we wouldn't have hurricanes, cyclonic storms, we wouldn't have typhoons, we wouldn't have auroras, you wouldn't have electrical thunderstorms, and the list goes on and on. You wouldn't have comets. I mean, it's amazing. Everything that's provided by the electrical discharge of the solar capacitor, something that's actually at a very low ebb right now. So once again, out of time for this week. I'll be back next week. Remember the MR5, MR7 whole house water filters, tremendous prices. Those are on sale with free shipping to the 48 states. That will not last very long because... but anyway, it's a good way to get these out there, get them started. 15% off of the water filters and the water filter elements. And remember that mine are the best ones on the planet. You do not need add-on filters with my filters. In fact, my filters cost less than other people's add-on filters, something they don't even talk about, something they try not to mention. And the wing generator, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.